Mother's Day is around the corner. Find the perfect gift for the mom in your life with a stunning piece of jewelry from Blue Nile. From timeless pearls to dazzling gemstones, Blue Nile has something she'll adore. Need it fast? Most items can ship overnight. Plus, enjoy guaranteed free shipping and returns. Don't miss our special Mother's Day deals. Save big on the season's most beautiful trends. For a limited time, get up to 50% off by going to BlueNile.com. That's BlueNile.com.
I'm Alex Rodriguez.
And I'm Jason Kelly.
From Bloomberg, this is The Deal. Each week, you're here as in conversation with business icons.
This show will explore deal-making across sports, media, and entertainment.
That is a harsh lesson in business.
Sports is not as simple as bringing a bunch of big names together.
I didn't want to do another stomp you out speech.
It opened up so many more doors.
The show is called The Deal.
Listen to The Deal.
Listen to The Deal on Spotify.
Hello and welcome to the Manchester is Red podcast, brought to you by the Manchester Evening News, available on all your podcast platforms and also now on YouTube as well. Head over to the Manchester is Red podcast channel over there. Subscribe to us and you can watch these podcasts as videos, and there's also lots of extra content as well that we release throughout the week as well. I'm Rich Fay and I can really sympathise with Erik ten Hag this week, because we have our own selection shortage, but that doesn't mean we've got a drop-off in quality by any means. I'm delighted to say I'm joined by only one guest, but what a guest he is, Mr. Samuel Luckhurst. How are you doing?
That's quite the introduction. Thank you very much, Rich. Yeah, I'd like to think that we are the Casemiro Eriksson, but younger in soul, perhaps, if not in age. Well, certainly as far as I'm concerned, anyway. Maybe,
I think I'm worried the listeners might liken us to McFred instead. That's my dilemma. But, you know, it could be a return of McFred in the coming days. We will start at the weekend. Crystal Palace, United played them again. They only played them recently as well. 2-1 win at Old Trafford. United have made a real habit of managing to grind out these sort of gritty wins throughout the campaign. A match that was marred by the red card incident, that's going to be discussed later in the podcast, really. But what did you make of the win? Do you think United were good value for the victory?
They were. They were very good for the first 30, 35 minutes. They eased off towards the end of the first half, and really it was shaping up to be one of those halves, even after they scored, that you thought, well, they're going to be disappointed if they don't go in at half-time 2-0 up. Credit to Ten Hag again. His game management was excellent. That very decisively early in the second half, Veikkaus came off, Garnacho went on, Rashford went up front, and of course Rashford is front and centre to convert the cross from Luke Shaw. And it was a really, really well worked goal. I mean, it felt like it was a good goal at the time, and the more you see of the replays, the even better a goal it is. It was just so well worked, very good. Proactive, purposeful play in the right area, and very slick, very quick. So it was turning out to be quite a mundane but vital home win for United. And then the whole afternoon was enhanced, really, for supporters' experience of the red card and that Schlupp goal, which obviously made it another tight, narrow victory. But teams always strive to win games as easily as possible, but when you grind it out, when it goes down to the wire, that does make victories all the more satisfying. And you could tell just looking at the players at the end of the game, the supporters, it's a very, very harmonious environment at United at the moment. I think that game was played around a year on from the cup defeat to Middlesbrough on penalties, and obviously that the mood at the club wasn't particularly great at the time. And certainly in February, although I don't think they actually lost a game outright in February, but it wasn't a particularly positive month. They didn't win many games. They had a lot of draws. And at the moment, you just look at the state of the nation, and you look at where they are in each of the four competitions they're competing in. And it's impossible for them not to be positive. But of course, because of the red card, literally every question Ten Hag was asked after the game in his press conference was about Casemiro being sent off.
The incident itself, then, I mean, is the elephant in the room, really. Where do you stand on it? It's a difficult one. You can see both arguments, really, can't you? That why it was given at the time, United would be find it difficult to appeal it because they'd have to prove that it wasn't unlawful dismissal. I mean, how do you feel about it? Do you think it was fair to give him the red card, or do you believe that, yes, he sent him off, but someone else deserved to go as well?
I can certainly understand why the referee sent him off from the evidence that was provided to him. It was so unclear again, and this is an issue with VAR that they've still not rectified. United fans, probably because they're used to decisions mainly going their way, historically going their way at Old Trafford, when the referee indicated that he was doing a review, they thought that it was a Palace player who's going to be sent off, and of course he picks out Casemiro, and suddenly the mood changes. There wasn't great communication there, but the replay that we saw, which is what the referees saw, clearly they looked at the IU Fred incident and they moved on from that, and it was on to the Casemiro one. But what I thought at the time, and I've thought that a number of times about VAR reviews, when you slow it down, and people have said it before to the point that it has become a cliche, if you slow anything down, it looks a hell of a lot worse. And I think crucially with the Casemiro incident, it was also taken out of context in that it was ended early. It didn't show you it in its entirety. He was needlessly aggressive, but he was trying in a counterproductive way, so to speak, to try and calm matters. Like, he, you know, you look at the interaction between him and Will Hughes, and it's not like a massive pile up. They're not about to, you know, launch fists at each other or anything like that. And I think if the referee had seen it in its entirety and at the actual pace that it took place, I don't think he would have sent him off. And I mean, the angle on Match of the Day, when they analysed it, was not shown to the referee, but that is what I'd have said should have been, not what I would have said, but I certainly think that's what should have been shown to the referee. The angle he saw was just from the back of Casemiro, hand around the neck, and it's pretty much a 2 second clip that is slowed down. On that evidence, it wasn't a surprise that he sent him off, and the more he looked at it and the more it was slowed down, everybody knew what was coming. Certainly everybody who had a monitor, which unfortunately for 75,000 people, that's not the case. But as Ten Hag said afterwards, the IU Fred incident was arguably more aggressive, and there is an inconsistency there in that Casemiro is sent off and then Jordan Ayew isn't sent off. I mean, it was interesting that Ten Hag was quite critical of, he was very specific about the inconsistency of VAR. He wasn't critical of the referee, and at the end of the game when he strode onto the pitch, you wondered if he was going to have a pop at Andre Mariner, but he didn't. Patrick Vieira did. Vieira was furious about a Palace attack being halted because Mariner had caught Bruno Fernandes at, I think it was at 2-1 as well, and United were down to 10 men, so it felt like, to Palace anyway, it felt like an important flashpoint. But Ten Hag was asked on Friday about some of the decisions that have gone against United recently, and he was the one who brought up the elbow by Mateta on Lisandro Martinez in the reverse fixture. And of course, he was very, very unhappy with Andy Carroll's reckless fouling. And United were certainly denied what looked like a patent penalty against Forest when Weghorst was kicked inside the penalty area. But he was reluctant to go into demanding an explanation or being overly critical of the officials. So when the Casemiro red card happened, I think it's not really tipped him over the edge as such, but in quite a cogent way, he outlined his grievances with the VAR system. And I mean, with Carroll, that they couldn't review that unless they deemed it a red card, and it was probably bordering on it, but at the time everyone just thought, well, how the hell has he not been booked there? And they're not going to review a yellow card. It's always a possible red card that they would review in those circumstances. So I can see why they feel aggrieved. I certainly think that there is a case to appeal it, just going off these relevant replays that show it in its context in full. But as Ten Hag said, Casemiro crossed a line, and if he's saying that, it possibly indicates that they won't bother appealing it. As of yesterday, there was no clarity from United on the matter. The question's been asked today. There's not been a definitive response supplied to us so far. Maybe by the time people are listening to this, we will know, they will know whether United have appealed it or not, but there's such a small window to do so because, of course, it's Leeds at home on Wednesday and here we are speaking on the Monday.
Yeah, we are speaking. Record this just before 2 p.m. on the Monday for context. And to give you a wider sort of look into the law of it, clubs can only launch an appeal if a player has been brandished with a straight red card. So obviously in this context, that is allowed. Meaning players who set off for two bookings can't be, must serve their ban without dispute, that can't be overturned. And United must file an appeal to the FA under the category of a wrongful dismissal, which is then passed on to an independent regulatory commission at the FA who will review the incident and decide whether it was correct for Mariner to send Casemiro off. That is if they appeal it. And of course, as Samuel said, that appeal has to be within 2 days of the match as well. So that would have to be filed today on Monday. And as Samuel said, at this very moment in time, just before 2 p.m, there is no indication of that. And of course, the other caveat to all that is that an appeal can be rejected and extended as well. So, you know, it could be given an extra lengthy ban, but it seems like that wouldn't happen in this case. But
Mother's Day is around the corner. Find the perfect gift for the mom in your life with a stunning piece of jewelry from Blue Nile. From timeless pearls to dazzling gemstones, Blue Nile has something she'll adore. Need it fast? Most items can ship overnight. Plus, enjoy guaranteed free shipping and returns. Don't miss our special Mother's Day deals. Save big on the season's most beautiful trends. For a limited time, get up to 50% off by going to BlueNile.com. That's BlueNile.com.
I'm Alex Rodriguez.
And I'm Jason Kelly.
From Bloomberg, this is The Deal. Each week, you'll hear us in conversation with business icons.
This show will explore deal-making across sports, media, and entertainment.
That is a harsh lesson in business.
Sports is not as simple as bringing a bunch of big names together.
I didn't want to do another stomp you out speech.
It opened up so many more doors.
The show is called The Deal.
Listen to The Deal.
Listen to The Deal on Spotify.
There's a lot to get into on that. I suppose the point question going forward, before we get onto Leeds purposely, is how United sort of reacted to the red card, Samuel. I mean, after the game, David De Gea spoke passionately, praised his teammates for riding the storm and to seeing out what was at the end a bit of a gritty win, like I said. It could have been more comfortable earlier on the game. But what did you make of United's mentality after the goal and the changes that Ten Hag made?
Well, Ty and I, we're in the press box, obviously, and I said before it happened, I said he's got to take Garnacho off here. And that wasn't a criticism of him at all. It was just he was an 18-year-old in a very unfamiliar position, and United needed people who were experienced in defending a lead with 10 men, and they also needed a defender or two, which is what Ten Hag did. He put Lindelof on, he put Maguire on. His game management at the weekend in the second half was excellent, as I said earlier, about moving Rashford infield, and he gets the winning goal from a very central area. And I, certainly after the red card and more immediately after Schlupp scored, United were very open, and I just thought there's no way they can hang on here with those players out there. And I'm not a big fan of the five subs rule. I do think it's excessive, but if you're a manager, you've got to maximise that. And Ten Hag certainly did. Lindelof and Maguire both went on. I think Wan-Bissaka was the other one who came off, which was an interesting move, given that Wan-Bissaka is a very athletic right back, and he's certainly a defender that you want in those areas. But maybe he felt that United needed more, a little bit more physicality or more of an aerial threat. Maguire has done that job a few times in recent weeks, coming on where United have been defending a lead. He got more minutes at the weekend. Normally he's been coming on the 89th minute or the 90th minute in those wins against Wolves and Manchester City. And I think on both occasions he did get some important headers in and cleared his lines. But once those changes had been made, I mean, Palace didn't really have a chance apart from the Eze one where Martinez got across. And I mean, Martinez always seemed to be there whenever Palace had a sniff or a slight sniff of a chance. He was absolutely phenomenal again for United on Saturday. But Palace didn't really have a clear-cut chance, and they had the man advantage. And that's a credit to Ten Hag, as I said earlier. He sensed what needed to change. There was one point, actually, where Palace were on the attack and United were down to 9 men, effectively, because Rashford was being shown a booklet by Ten Hag, essentially informing him what to do or inform his teammates what to do. So the pre-planning is clearly they're so fastidious with it that the impression I got from that was that they do actually prepare for in the event if they are down to 10 men and what shape they morph into, who goes where, who does what. And some players became even better when United were reduced to 10 men. That the one who really stood out for me was Fred. I thought Fred was having a steadily decent game up until the red card. After then, he was exceptional. And he's a player who, again, he's probably had more spectacular or standout runs of form under previous regimes, but there's no doubt that he's become a more consistent performer under Ten Hag. And his importance to United has probably never been higher, even though he's not been a regular at any real point this season. He's a regular at the moment, of course, because Eriksen's injured and Casemiro might be suspended for three matches. But you hope for his sake that he's not exposed during that period, that he doesn't regress at all, because as Ten Hag has used him in this almost a bit of a... He's used him more sparingly, and he's certainly been a more squad player this season, but he's had fulfilling minutes, and that is the best way to maximise him. So where he's likely to have a very, very regular run of games this month, and he seems pretty nailed on to start the League Cup final as well, and you've got big games coming up against Leeds and Barcelona, it's a very big test for him. But if he passes that assessment with flying colours... Again, it only reflects very, very well on Ten Hag and, of course, the player himself.
Yeah, I fully agree there that in the past it has been overexposure that has really been his downfall. The fact that he's been part of that derided McFred partnership, that axes, which are limited. You know what you're going to get, but you also know what you're not going to get. And like you said, I think when used sparingly, he's got a real use to this team. I suppose that the element of interest in that is that the two best performances from Fred this season were Tottenham and Man City at home, and he was dropped in the subsequent games both times then. So United have to play him now, and it's going to be interesting to see how they do that. Another midfielder of interest, Sabitzer, made his debut. Okay, not the easiest platform to do so. You're not going to get a full reflection of how good he is, but what are your early impressions of United's deadline day arrival?
He did very well in the circumstances. It does help that they've got a more experienced midfielder in there, because there was a lot of chatter, certainly from supporters, about the possibility of getting Gravenberg from Bayern Munich. And I don't think Gravenberg has even started a Bundesliga game all season since he joined Bayern. He's fallen out of the Dutch squad as well. And he's probably the more, I think he said in the summer, didn't he, that Ten Hag approached him about the prospect of moving to United, but he'd already given his word to Bayern. But in the circumstances mid-season, and given the state of the United midfield, it's better to have someone more experienced rather than a rookie, really. I know that's maybe overdoing it a bit with Gravenberg, because he's played quite a lot of football for his age. He's a 20-year-old. He's played and won things with Ajax, and he's played for the Dutch national team. But when it's mid-season, it's always better to have someone who's a bit wily and who's been around the block. And Sabitzer's a good age at 28, and he's played for a big club already in Bayern Munich, and he's had very good experiences with Leipzig, and he's played in two European championships as well. So that's always going to stand you in good stead when you're in a position where you're 2-1 up and you're down to 10 men, and it was absolutely obvious that they needed an extra midfielder to go on to offset the absence of Casemiro. And he was very dynamic. He was good with the ball. He linked up well a couple of times. It was a cameo, but it was a promising cameo, especially given the circumstances. So, provided Casemiro does serve out the suspension, Sabitzer has got... You'd think he's certain of starting these next three games. McTominay's out for a case of weeks, Ten Hag said on Tuesday last week. So. Yeah, he's probably got an outside chance of making the Leicester game, maybe getting his way back into the team this week. But it's you lay down the gauntlet to Sabitzer now, go up against Leeds United, who've got a couple of aggressive midfielders in their ranks, and I know they're not having a particularly good season at all under under Jesse Marsh, and they had another defeat against Forest at the weekend. But when they're coming up against Man United, you would imagine that those players will be even more up for it, because they will be well-versed in just how despised United are by anyone remotely connected with Leeds. Seeing the scenes outside the City Ground on Sunday, and how Leeds fans reacted just to losing to Nottingham Forest, you can only imagine how they will feel if they lose to United twice in a week.
And of course, you could see for Sabitzer against his former Leipzig teammate Tyler Adams as well. It's going to be an interesting dynamic there. What do you make of the make of them? I mean, it seems to me that you're hinting that you want to see Fred and Sabitzer play as the axis now, with Fernandes in front. Like you said, options are limited considering McTominay's layoff, and if he is back to fitness, he might not be thrown in. Do you think there's a case for any other possibilities? I know we've seen that Lindelof could play there, Lisandro Martinez could play in midfield. Do you actually think that any of those are likely to happen?
I think Martinez is too important to take out of defence, and there's an argument that you could do that. And if you're to keep a left-footed centre-back in there, Luke Shaw can go in there, as he did a few times in January and December, and did exceptionally well. But Martinez has been probably the best defender in the Premier League this season. It's him or Saliba, as far as I'm concerned. There's a case made for Varane as well, but he did have a while out injured. But Martinez, given the context of him coming into United and the scrutiny, he's been exceptional. So I think it's advised really to push him forward, but they have the option there. I think Lindelof did move into midfield against Forest last week when he came on, and it's worth trialing him there. He started his career with Benfica, I think, as a defensive midfielder, but you are literally going back 10 years there. He joined Benfica in 2013. He's renowned as a centre-back, and readjusting to that role, it'd be interesting to see, but you would want to do it in... I don't think Leeds at home is necessarily the occasion for it. But Sabitzer and Fred is not exactly... I mean, we can't know for certain until they do start a game together, but Sabitzer is quite an attack-minded midfielder. Fred has played probably his best football, or best run of form for United as an advanced midfielder. So someone has to change their role there. Sabitzer has played in more of a central midfield role for Bayern Munich, from what I can see. So maybe he's the one who has to occupy that role. But I suppose the positive about Casemiro's absence through suspension is that they're coming up against teams who are eminently beatable. He could miss the game against Leicester, and Leicester had a very good result at the weekend. And they've got some brilliant players who you do not want to underestimate at all whatsoever. But it is that's a home game that United should be beating. And Leeds, the form book does go out the window, that old cliche, because it is Man United against Leeds. But United have got superior players, and they are expected to take 6 points from those games this week. But Casemiro, we've not really seen yet, since he came into the team for a sustained period, whether that upsets the balance at United. And the one time he did come out of the team against Arsenal, the impact of his absence was profound. McTominay was a poor stopgap that day. He's never short of effort, but he is often short of quality. And when you're coming up against the league leaders, that was always likely to be exposed, and it was that day.
Yeah, like you said, there is that caveat that they're playing lesser teams, but they're lesser teams who both have really good attacking players. They might be maybe not the most consistent attacking outputs, but someone like James Maddison for Leicester, you look at Sinisterra at Leeds, these are players who can get into those open positions that can cause real havoc. So it's going to be interesting to see how United cope, and really interesting to see how they adapt to this role. Pushing on then, before we get onto our Leeds preview, Samuel, you've done the story today looking at United's sort of summer business, and we understand that United will have to sell players if they're going to be able to spend big in the summer. We know signing a striker is the priority for United. In order to do so, they not only need to get into Champions League, get the riches of that back, but they need to start offloading some of the players who just aren't good enough to take them to the next level. We spoke about one of them on last week's podcast. There's probably a group of five or six of players that you would say United should cash in on. And you've written a story today saying United are open to selling Anthony Martial. He's missed 20 games already this season. Erik ten Hag says United play their best football with him, but they just don't play that enough.
They don't, and there's an element of probably trying to protect the player's resale value there as well. On his day, he is a good player, but when does that happen? I think in the last couple of years, you could count the amount of times on, or the number of times on one hand, and he's not completed 90 minutes this season. When he did have a consistent run of games, his form was pretty inconsistent, and it's not really changed all season, really. They decided quite early on that they were going to have to be in for a new striker in the summer, and whenever a new striker comes in, Martial capitulates. Ibrahimovic came in, took his number 9. Martial reacted in quite a passive-aggressive way, changing his imagery on his social media accounts that showed he had the 9 on the back of his shirt. Sanchez came in, Martial wanted out. Cavani came in to keep Martial on his toes. He trampled all over Martial's toes, and Ronaldo was Martial was never going to put up much of a fight against him, and he had his worst scoring run ever for United with Ronaldo at the club. He only scored once for them against Everton last season. So United should not be inclined to indulge or pander to Martial anymore, other than Pogba, who's probably the other one who really benefited from the player power era, if you like. The manner of his contract in January 2019, I always felt really set a dangerous precedent in that United announced that they'd extended his contract by a year the day after Mourinho's final game, and within hours, Martial's agent was yet speaking to a French TV or a French outlet saying he was pessimistic of a renewal. Mourinho gets sacked the next day, and then something like 30-odd days later, Martial signed a new 5.5-year contract, it was a 5.5-year contract to 2024 with the plus one option. So that I always felt that set a really poor example by United going forward, that players could ride roughshod over them. Now, players can't ride roughshod over them anymore. Ten Hag has seen off Ronaldo, so anybody else is absolutely small fry. And it is in their interest to get a player off the books who occupies a position they want to strengthen in the summer. If they do bring in Victor Osimhen or Harry Kane, where's Martial going to play? He's going to be a backup player. He'll have 1 year left on his contract with the plus one option. That the summer is the prime time to sell him. United are only doing anything that any right-minded United fan would advise them to do. Any football executive would advise them to do on the administration side. It is not a difficult decision. He scored 6 goals this season. As you said, he's missed 20 of United's 34 games. And in the previous 2 seasons, he scored, I think, 8 goals for United. So that's what, 14 goals in 2.5 seasons, nearly 3 seasons. Yeah. You can't continue to go on with this narrative that, oh, he might come good or he's a player for the future, because he isn't. He's a 27-year-old, and his best season for United was his first season when he started as a teenager. So they have to cash in at the soonest possible time, and that's obviously the summer. He's not the only player that they've deemed sellable. Harry Maguire is one of them. Alex Telles, I believe, is another one. Names that don't come as a surprise whatsoever. Martial is the only one that, when I was first told his name, I was slightly surprised. But then as soon as you actually factor in all the context, all the issues around him as well, with his fitness and with his form as well, it's a very obvious decision to make. And he's also shown in the handful of games that he's had this season that when he is on it, he can still be a very good player, and he should be an asset to whichever club he joins. But United can't be scared of this. This, I mean, going back to 2018, they didn't want to sell him because they were fearful that he would go to a club and he would be brilliant. They can't be frightened of that anymore. And if he is brilliant elsewhere, so be it. United are in a stronger position now. And he wouldn't be the first player to leave United and go on and have a good career elsewhere.
No, in entering his eighth year now at United as well, like you said, they've got their... They've still got their money's worth, really, for the £50 million investment as the chant goes.
On the amortisation,
you've also got
definitely.
To remember, yeah, and you've got to remember as well that it's over 2 years now since he played 90 minutes in the Premier League. No other team would indulge him for this long. They would just get rid of him. So if United want to push on and make these ruthless decisions, then they've got to continue it with Marshall. I suppose then Samuel leads this midweek. I've spoke before we get into the preview of it. Where does that rank for you, United rivalries? We've been lucky enough to do sort of home and away since they've been back in the Premier League. And yeah. From my point of view, it is a lot nastier than City and Liverpool. There's a real, obviously, there's Yorkshire, Lancashire. There's a real hatred between the two clubs, which often makes for pretty compelling matches.
Yeah. And as you say, nasty is the right word. I mean, they're probably far more worse words that you could use to describe it. It really is quite bilious, and I think for a generation of supporters, some of the scenes before the first game last season would have been a jolt to them. The scuffles that were going on in Deansgate between the two sets of supporters. I think that was the first game between United and Leeds in the league with fans present in that must have been 17 and a half years. So that's always going to fuel it, but. I mean, I can't possibly forget when we went to Elland Road, you very bravely wore a red Wrexham hat, and I immediately worried for your safety. You were at the end of the row on our table in the press box, and I think the only chap who recognised your hat, fortunately for you, was a Leeds fan who happened to be from Wales, and you had quite an amicable conversation with him about Wrexham and how they were getting on, so... at least that passed off without incident. But I remember the Leeds officials last season saying how delighted they were that he was absolutely chucking it down. I think Ian Herbert from the Daily Mail was stationed outside Elland Road the whole afternoon just in case there was any trouble. But the best deterrent for avoiding trouble or preventing trouble is the weather, and it poured down all day. So fortunately, the game seemed to pass off without incident. But it is. It's a truly. Leeds fans detest United, and a lot of people at Leeds detest United. And you only had to see the statement the other week about Chris Armas joining the Leeds backroom staff, and he was. I think the statement from Leeds, it said he was at another Premier League club last season. They can't even bring themselves to say United's name. And I remember when it was that the tour in 2019 that we went on, and I interviewed Pablo Hernandez in Perth, and he was told that one time he wore red trainers to Elland Road, and he was told, "Oh, you can't wear them because red, the colour red is even abhorred by Leeds fans." So there'll be some good pieces out there for people to brush up on their history and just gauge how toxic a rivalry it is. It's obviously not been helped by the odd infamous transfer between the clubs, mainly in the direction from Leeds to Manchester, and
yeah, not Dan James.
The impact, no, that might have actually smoothed the relationship for a brief period. Certainly from United's perspective, getting $25 million for him, but obviously, I think Cancelo even recalled going back to Elland Road as a United player how his English wasn't great at that time, but. The Munich chanting was certainly, he cottoned on to that. And I think the home game last season, it was the first time I'd heard in a long, long time the Munich chant being aired by a set of supporters at Old Trafford. And there was a United fan who obviously had a banner referring to the two Leeds fans who were stabbed and killed in Istanbul in 2000. So, sections of both teams' support do stoop to the lowest of the low, really, to score cheap points.
Hey there! Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Hey, it's Kaylee Cuoco for Priceline. Ready to go to your happy place for a happy price? Well, why didn't you say so? Just download the Priceline app right now and save up to 60% on hotels. So whether it's Cousin Kevin's Kazoo Concert in Kansas City, go Kevin! Or Becky's Bachelorette Bash in Bermuda, you never have to miss a trip ever again. So download the Priceline app today. Your savings are waiting.
Go to your happy place for a happy price. Go to your happy price, Priceline.
Let's hope the football takes centre stage when they meet twice in the next coming weeks as well. And like you said, the first meeting is on Wednesday night, Samuel. Ahead of the game then, United should be feeling confident. They've got a good track record in these sorts of matches this season. They've made a real habit of just winning the games you'd expect them to win. But of course, no Eriksen, most likely no Casemiro as well. What do you make of United's approach for it? Do you think it will be another game in which they've just got to try and attack from the off? The onus is on them at home. Or do you think there should be an element of caution? Because it is a derby. It is a bit different.
Well, they go off to a brilliant start against Palace with the penalty award and Fernandes converting that in the seventh minute, I think. And they were very front-footed with their approach. And I think they had in the back of their minds the way they were, just how casual they were against Palace itself first in the second half, where they didn't force the issue. They didn't get that elusive second goal, and it cost them. On Saturday, they did get the second goal, and that was the difference between the teams. I saw the first half of Leeds' defeat at Forest on Sunday, and they actually seemed to play quite well. I mean, Keylor Navas seems to have been made man of the match for that game. He made a couple of good saves, or a few good saves in the first half. It was a brilliant goal by Brennan Johnson that got that win for Forest, who they've made a habit of getting some very gritty wins at home this season without really particularly convincing from what I've seen of them. The West Ham game at the start of the season springs to mind. And I still, when I look at the table, I think it's a little bit misleading with Leeds. I thought at Liverpool earlier this season, they were tremendous. It was probably one of the best performances all season in the Premier League. And you could say Liverpool have gone off the ball and they're, 10th in the league at the moment. They're not themselves this season. But when you go to Anfield and you win 2-1 as Leeds United, whatever the era, that's a brilliant win. That's a brilliant performance. And they were exceptional that day. They really did deserve it. So they have got the capabilities to cause a shock going off that result. And as I said, when I look at their position in the league, I'm still not convinced that that's a reliable gauge of where they are. I know that they're still too poor as a team, which was their undoing under Bielsa. They were only ever going one way with him last season. Patrick Bamford is starting up front again, and he's a good footballer, but he's not a good goal scorer. That's been the accusation leveled against him for most of his career. But they've got some mercurial players who, on a certain night, they can be that unpredictable that they'll come up trumps and they'll get the winning goal. And Melia, who I thought was a dreadful goalkeeper last season and probably in his first season in the Premier League, seems to have improved this season. And I'm certainly not expecting United to take Leeds to the cleaners like they did under Bielsa. I mean, they scored 6 against them, they scored 5 against them and 4 against them. There was just that anomalous 0-0 at Elland Road a few days after the Super League where they didn't take Leeds to the cleaners. So, you know, given as we've discussed ad nauseum United's tendency to win games by a narrow goal, it really wouldn't surprise me if that's the case again on Wednesday night and even maybe Sunday as well.
Yeah, I was going to ask you for your prediction, but that sounds like it will be that another United narrow win, which I guess, you know, fans won't complain about. It's all about picking up points, particularly in this season while other teams are faltering. If United can just stay consistent, then they're as good as secure Champions League football. And like we said, they've got a good chance in the cup competitions as well. So we'll see what happens at Old Trafford when we join you later in the week. Samuel Luckhurst, thank you very much for joining us today on the Manchester Is Red podcast.
Thank you, Rich Fay. I hope you've come down from Owen O'Connell's winner at the weekend as well.
Well, trip to Sheffield for me on Tuesday night to watch the replay as well. So
of
it
course,
could be a very
yes.
giddy week ahead for us Wrexham fans. And yeah, thank you very much to all of you, wherever you are in the world, for listening to this podcast. And it, like we said, watch it on YouTube as well. Manchester Is Red on YouTube, and we're available on all your usual podcast platforms. We'll be back later in the week to look back at what happened against Leeds, look ahead to what happens against Leicester as well. Take care, and we'll see you again next time.